freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Big night last night as Mariners get another win, walk-off variety over the Braves. Heck of a game, and we'll talk to Jeff Passan about it coming up in 30 minutes. If you haven't heard the highlights, stick around. You'll hear it right at the beginning of Need to Know here in 15. The Kraken made a coaching change. We'll discuss that in about 15, 20 minutes as well. But before we get there, Brock, Stacey asked me a question on Saturday. We were in here doing a little draft show, which was fun, by the way. It's fun working with Stacey. And she said, what should the expectations be for the Seahawks this year? And I started thinking about it and decided to write about it last night. You can read it, seattlesports.com, because I think we now know who the Seahawks are. We just don't really know what they are, right? We have a pretty good idea of who the personnel is going to be. We know the coaching staff now. The draft is done. Free agency's mostly done. There might be some tweaking here and there, as you mentioned earlier. But for the most part, we got a pretty good sense of who the roster is. But what can you really expect? And how are you going to judge this team this year? I'm not going to judge them by their record entirely. Like, I don't think they're a Super Bowl team. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender. I would be blown away, shocked if this team makes a Super Bowl this year. Mm-hmm. And as I said and kind of wrote this last night, maybe you disagree with me, I would be surprised. The recipe for getting to a Super Bowl for like the last, I don't know, forever is either you've got an elite quarterback who brings a good roster to the, you know, to the Super Bowl, or you've got an elite roster who brings a good quarterback to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see the Seahawks as having either of those things. Mm-hmm. They have a good quarterback. They have a good roster, maybe. But I don't know that I could say that either of those two are so elite that I would expect them to be in the Super Bowl this year.
Is that how they did it kind of in 10, 11, into 12, 13, 14, as they just built that roster up? They developed from within and developed their own. And I would kind of add that component to it, that it usually aren't the dream teams, that it usually
Absolutely.
Is kind of your homegrown guys. And I know the Rams went all in and traded for Ramsey and brought Stafford in, but a lot of the nuts and bolts, and Aaron Donald was certainly the center piece as homegrown as it could possibly get right in the middle of their team. So yeah, I think over the last couple decades, that's probably a fair characterization. Build the roster
for the most part, either
or try to just take a run at a QB.
You got to have one or the other. One of those two things needs to be special, and I don't see them right now as being special on the Seahawks roster. Doesn't mean they won't be good, doesn't mean they're not building, but I wouldn't say that for 2024 it's reasonable to expect that either of those two spots are going to be, you know, legitimately elite. So then what? If you're not competing for a Super Bowl, I don't know what the point of looking at the record is. The difference in records is not really what's going to tell the story of this team. What'll tell the story for this team is growth. Right?
And developers, developers. Go. Yes.
Well, it's looking
the development at, of that, of, absolutely. Of those pieces.
Right? And I'm going to throw the head coach in there as well, because you got to find out what he looks like. What kind of a manager is he of people? What kind of a culture setter is he? What kind of a game day manager is he? What does he do during games? Does he have command of the team, of the challenge flag, of the, you know, just that sense that good coaches have for when to push the right buttons during games.
What if he's D'Amico Ryans? And I know D'Amico got CJ Stroud, but is CJ Stroud as a rookie that much better than Geno Smith? I don't know. I wouldn't say that. I would say that he had a pretty good supporting cast around him. And I think a D'Amico Ryans and his staff came in there, Saul, and just did anybody look at the Houston Texans going into last year, even with CJ and Will Anderson? Those are still, I mean, super talented players, but they're still rookies in this league. Did anybody look at them as a second round playoff team with a first time head coach? No. But D'Amico came in and just infused them with a belief and with a talent and with a scheme that was like, this is what we're going to do.
And let me be clear. I'm not saying the Seahawks couldn't be a playoff team this year. They might be. I didn't think Houston was a Super Bowl team last year, and they weren't. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the Seahawks are going to be a Super Bowl team this year, and I'll be shocked if they are. But it doesn't mean that there's not significant growth that could take place. To me, that's not a shot. I'm not saying they're going to be a bad team. But Super Bowl team? Mm-hmm. Come on. This is not a Super Bowl team the way it's built currently. So what are they doing in order to get there? Are we going to see significant growth from these last three draft classes? right? There are a bunch of dudes in there that you are kind of waiting on to see, are you going to be better than you've been so far? Is Boye Mafe going to develop, Brock, there's your word again, into a star? Are they going to be able to salvage Derek Hall at just a terrible first season at the edge? Are they going to get the most out of Witherspoon? Are they going to get Tariq Woolen back under, you know, control? Are they going to let these running backs run wild and open up holes for them? Is Jaxon Smith-Njigba going to be taken advantage of with his unique talent? Like,
developers.
You know, well, that when we do this, nothing gets done for like 20 minutes.
Nothing.
You're just going on. It was like you sounded. You were in the cadence of it.
I love when he gets guttural. I love when he kind of clenches his jaw. Yeah. I said, know that feeling, Steve. Yes, I gotcha. You know, what do the kids call it, Salk, when they work on their jawline?
The mewing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he starts mewing. Developers. I just love that.
Mm.
And that's really the football component of this, Saul, because you rattle those names off. That's a lot of names. That's not one or two guys.
Well, and that's just the last two draft classes. That doesn't include this year as well. I mean, like, you got some dudes that you got to find out about.
And frankly, that is why I think Jody Allen from the top made the decision that she made when the season ended. Like, there is some pretty good clay to mold here. And can we get it in the kiln? And can it be a different product? Like, if you ran the same coaching staff out and you ran the same scheme out, Salk, and you ran, I think, Pete out there with some of the same kind of messaging, you sensed it. You sensed it from Jackson at the Super Bowl with Shane Waldron. Like, this just isn't going to.
Not enough.
It's not enough. It's not going to give us enough growth and development with these young pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Can these new set of eyes? A new, young, energetic staff, right? New, young, fresh schemes. And I'll say it again. I mean, it is diverse. It is going to be much more multiple, for better or worse, right? I mean, Pete, every game was a one-score game. You know, very rarely were they blown out, save for Baltimore and a few times where they were just physically humiliated. His style, his scheme kept teams close, right? It was keep in front of you, make them earn it, limit possessions, get the game to the fourth quarter. You know, this, I think, will feel a little bit different because these guys are going to actually be aggressive.
So they're
going to be
multiple. Judge this team?
How will I judge this team?
What are reasonable expectations for judging this team? If we both agree they're unlikely to go to a Super Bowl, what are you judging? What are you looking for?
Well, I think exactly to your point, you know, is this thing going the right direction? Right. I'm not going to hold first time head coach, first time coordinators totally accountable. Week number one, week number five. Like, there's going to be some mistakes made. There's going to be lessons learned, as there are with young players. There is no substitute for flight hours. You got to get up in the plane. You got to fly it yourself. And there's going to be, the game is going to move fast at times. And you know, I would love to see the head coach and the coordinators and all those guys all continue to make an ascent along with those players that got to go from good to great. They got to go from good to great. I mean, that is also what happened in 10, 11, 12, 13. KJ and Cam and Richard and Earl, they didn't come on the scene, all of them, and were all pros out the gate.
Nope,
they took a little seasoning, took a little marinating, took some steps, like took some flashes. Boye is absolutely flashed like those guys did in their first couple years, right? Charles Cross is absolutely flashed like those guys did their first couple years. So you've now got to, instead of flashes, you've got to say, no, I'm one of the great ones in this league.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a bona fide difference maker in this league, not just a good player. So that's, I think, where some of my judgment and opinion and certainly where my wide set eyes will be watching over the course of 2024.
There's no doubt you got to see improvement. And I would say even more specifically, it's got to be up front, where they continue to say, this is so important to us. Being, you know, what you do up front matters. Being physical, being a bully, all of those things.
Salk, I got four words. I love this team.
Developers. I love this team. All right, enough. I want your voice to still be working when we talk to Passan here in 20 minutes. We'll come right back with everything you need to know.
I love this team.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Baseball, as much as virtually anything else in life, certainly in sports, will test your faith. And you got to see it last night. Frustration in the eighth as they loaded the bases with one out. Julio and Haniger couldn't come through. In the ninth, however, down a run. Polanco singles to lead off the inning, and Mitch Garver took it from there.
A stretch by Minter. Polanco a lead, and the lefties 3-2 on the way, swinging a fly ball deep to left field, and this one is goodbye baseball, a walk-off two-run home run for Mitch Garver, and the Mariners win it. They win it 2-1 over the Atlanta Braves. Garver with his fist in the air, rounding second, ready for the ovation, and greeting his teammates at home plate, a high five for Manny Ecta. Garver tosses his helmet, slams it down, being mobbed by his teammates. The Mariners with a walk-off win tonight over the Atlanta Braves.
What a night.
He was thirsty for that one, Salk, and they drenched him. He was waiting for that. He's been grinding behind the scenes. Listen to Angie Menting talk about that post-game of just how much this guy's working, right? Just a pro. And he knows. Right, he knows that this pitching staff has carried them through this month of April. He knows that this pitching staff has given them a lead, a game lead in the division, and in series win after series win, that he and Polanco got to get it going. They're the veteran guys, got to get it going. And those two delivered there when it mattered the most.
I also like that they didn't give it up, right? I mean, you mess up in the eighth, you have that opportunity, you don't get it done. But they didn't just roll over and die at that point, and I think that's important.
Yeah, guys know. You know, even I said to Polo about the sixth inning, I said, great game tonight, isn't it? He laughed. He goes, it is a good game. You know, I just had a feeling, you know, if we could just – I thought it was going to happen in the eighth. I really did when we got the pinch hit, you know, at hits from Rojas and Raley, you know, top of lower order coming up. You know, they didn't come through. The other guys picked them up after that. And that's – you know, Polo's a veteran. He's been around leading off the ninth inning. Garver's not going to panic, even though they're not getting off to the starts they hope they got off to here. We have a lot of baseball to go, and they've proven themselves in this league, and it shows up late in games.
Two things also jumped out about that, Salt. Number one, Bolton and both doing their job. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't get it. They scored another run. I don't know if that happens, right? But they just put another zero and another zero after Bryce's incredible performance. And number two, that felt eerily similar to Suarez. It was against the Braves, too, right? Mm-hmm. Julio did a home run, and yep. It almost felt like the same spot. Like, yep, just like Suarez delivered as a veteran guy.
Yes, it really was crushed. And it maybe even overshadows an incredible night for Bryce Miller, who completely dominated arguably the best lineup in the game. So they just keep on rolling. They'll do it again tonight. Chance to win another series with Luis Castillo on the hill.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Changes coming to the Seattle Kraken. They are moving on from their head coach, the only head coach in their history, Dave Haxtell, let go yesterday by GM Ron Francis. I think this is the right move. I've not been a big Haxtell fan. I'm not surprised to hear that there were some issues in that locker room and that some of the veterans were done and wanted this to kind of make that change in order to try to move forward. They couldn't run things back the way they were, but this goes certainly beyond what's being said behind the bench. There's a roster talent issue on this team as well. And, you know, we went through this at the end of the year. When you look at Sprong and Donato and Geeky and the guys that left, they had really good years, and productive. You look at the guys that were brought in to replace them, and they were not productive. In fact, quite the opposite. So, you know, you get one, I'm sure, as a general manager, and you can say, okay, this wasn't the right head coach. But now that you've moved on from the coach,
yes,
all eyes going to be on you, Mr. Francis.
It will. And, you know, not too dissimilar to the conversation we just had about the Seahawks and your homegrown talent and your draft picks and, you know, your young guys that got to develop. And Beniers did not this year. And whether that was because not surrounded by a lot of other people around him, or didn't have enough abrasion around him, or even just himself in his own game with the coaching and whatever. Mm-hmm. There's just not a step forward for much of your young pieces either. And that, too, has to change for that organization.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Organization. The draft's done. The rookie's going to start minicamp, next week? Seahawks, they're eventually going to have to make some interesting roster decisions on what direction they want to go with some guys that are going to be competing. Brady Henderson had a thought. I don't know whether I'm all the way with him on this, but I'll play it for you. This was Brady on what they could do up front on defense.
They've got kind of a lot of guys there between your defensive ends and your defensive tackles. And the first thing that came to my mind when I saw them draft Byron Murphy is, okay, could you end up looking to trade one of these guys? And could that be Jaron Reed, who's 31 years old? Nothing about the way Jaron Reed played last year, but just from a salary cap and number standpoint, and a point that Brock made, which is that there is only one defensive tackle taken in the first round this year. So if other teams around the NFL didn't fill that need in the draft, you know, could they be looking to trade for a veteran like Jaron Reed?
I don't know. I would have felt like maybe you could have, would have, should have, might have done that in the second round of this draft if you could have found somebody, and that just didn't really materialize. Now, you know, we'll see. This is kind of the final phase of the offseason, right? You have the first wave and the first phase of free agency. Then you have the draft. And then beginning today, you can start to sign these guys that are on the street. And there's a bunch of them. There's a dozen or more really good players that are going to find a home elsewhere. The Justin Simmons of the world, Quandre Diggs of the world, that now can sign without it affecting the compensatory formula and draft pick situation.
Should also play you some of this. Jim Mora, Brock, your friend, who we play almost every day here in our open, since he's not a friend of yours, as he let everybody know. He had some nice thoughts on the guy he's coached last few years, Christian Haynes, his guard.
He's high character, high quality, tremendous morals, has a great moral compass, high ethics. He's just a great kid. He's very understated. He's quiet. He's serious. He's very secure in himself. He just has tremendous leadership ability. He's coachable.
It's interesting. Wow. Those traits that Jim possesses?
Two-time captain as well. Coach Moore had mentioned that. Hey, why don't you play? That's everything himself. You need to know. Why don't you play for Frank and Justin? I don't even know. Has Justin ever even heard the full Jim
Mora?
I don't think you've ever.
Have you ever?
Heard
I have.
That? Justin, have the you ever gotten thing? The full Monty? Have you ever gotten the full Mora?
I don't think. No.
Is that really necessary?
And Frank, you certainly have not.
I like the way you characterize it, so I'm not sure.
Frank has certainly not gotten ever the full Mora.
Let's see. There's a lot of Jim Mora in here, Brock. I mean, like, if you want to go way back.
You got to be a little bit of a dirtbag.
Right.
Not as a person. But on the football field.
That's
in
right.
The pits.
In the pit where
the,
all that stuff goes down. Yeah. And if you don't have some freaking toughness, you're going to get your, you're going to fail.
Do you remember when I asked him about the pit years later?
All right, last thing for you, Jim, and then we'll let you go. You know, as this draft comes up and everybody's trying to figure out which quarterback is going to fit where, if you were selecting in one of these cities and had this pick, and you knew that that you were going to be in the pit where it all goes down, which of these five or six?
Oh, that's so funny. Such a beast.
I forgot about
There's
that.
So much, and you just search the name. Oh, yeah.
What Brock Huard says?
No, I don't care.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Huard has to say. I've known Brock a long time.
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah.
No friends.
In all fairness to my comment.
In all fairness to my comment. That's so good. That is so good. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Apparently, there's a song in here. Do you remember a song?
No.
I don't either. Let's see.
UCLA has fired their football coach, Jim Mora.
Don't come around here no more.
You got to be a little bit of a dirtbag. Not as a person.
Not as a person.
Pit where all that stuff goes down.
I don't remember doing that. That must have been a Howdy Jim back in the day. All right. Let's see. That's enough making fun of Jim Mora. We've got to move on. We've got to go talk to our guy, Jeff Passan. We'll do it next about these red hot Mariners. Stick around. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
A little baseball game last night, pitcher's duel, and Mariners end up on the top end of it. Didn't look like it was necessarily going to go that way as Bryce Miller dominated, but so did Max Fried, and then you give up one run. It looked like, honestly, Brock, I was prepared to come in and say defense was really the story of that game, and people were going to get mad at me and be like, how dare you, offense, 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 and I was going to say, no, this one to me was all about defense. You had two pitchers that were dominating, and Dylan Moore couldn't get to a ball. Unfortunately, it leads to a run, and then an inning later, you know, you have an opportunity to score and give credit to their second baseman, Ozzie Albies, because he made a nice play. He knocked the ball down. He didn't get the out, but he saved a run. And I thought that was going to be the difference in the game. You didn't get to a ball. They did.
Instead, Polanco gets a single, and obviously Mitch Garver took care of the rest with a huge blast. So, fun game last night, and these Mariners have been rolling a little bit. Let's talk to Jeff Passan, as we do this time every week. Hi, Jeffrey. Good morning.
How are you, gentlemen?
You know, we're really good. I really enjoyed that game. I don't know if you got a chance to watch any of that Mariner game last night, but pitcher's duel, both guys throwing no-hitters into the seventh, and then you end up with a walk-off win. I don't know what else you could ask for from a baseball game.
I mean, the call on it was so good, too. Like, the whole scene, Mitch Garver finally, like, doing something productive. And you know he has it in him, right? Like, you know, even amid the struggling, that there's going to be a few of those moments this year. And that's, you know, I understand he's making real money and the productivity expected of him is something, but on a contending team with a guy of Mitch Garver's ilk, all you need is like four or five big moments where he helps you win a ball game. And that's a dude contributing the way that he needs to.
You know, assuming is always dangerous. So I don't want to assume anything here, but you wrote a book all about the arm. I would assume you love good pitching duels. Is that fair?
The best. Absolutely.
What is a good, amazing, great pitching duel versus, oof, really struggling offenses? How do you characterize the difference?
You know, I think it's easier to do that now. We're able to quantify the stuff better, right?
Mm-hmm.
I also look at Max Fried and Bryce Miller, and I'm like, yeah, that's a pitcher's duel right there. Like, those are when you picture a pitcher's duel, those are like the faces and the arms that come up in the same way where when you picture a middle-aged man trying to do something right that he shouldn't, you picture Mike Sauk on the ground with a busted hammy.
Wow. I mean, on the other hand, winning the race, because he was that far ahead that he continued to win even after injuring his hammy, still limped to a victory. So, yeah. I mean, it's cool. Yeah. You can talk trash, but you're yet another hater. You're yet another person who fueled my flame. You're yet another reason why I won this race handily. And, my hamstring hurts. That's fine. It was worth it for the victory and shutting up people like you.
Yeah, the thing is, you didn't shut us up. If you had won the race, you would have. You won it with an asterisk or perhaps
how an asterisk?
An ice pack.
What are you talking about? I not only won it, I won it by so much I limped to a finish.
I know, and that's
I won by
right
so
there.
Much, Jeff, that Mora didn't even show up for work this week.
Yeah, I do agree with that was a weak move by Mora going like running off to the Caribbean.
Yeah, pretty lame.
Like, you can't do that. You gotta go face your tormentor and laugh at him as he limps along.
Yeah.
Because running a lap took so much. I'm sorry, not even a lap, right?
Half a lap.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I was gonna say if you had tried to go a lap, would you have torn the other hamstring too?
Well, probably. And if I had tried to go a whole lap, I probably would have not tried to turn it on the way I tried to, like, go not 0 to 60, but like 30 to 60, or in my case, like, you know, 5 to 8. And unfortunately, the hamstring didn't respond the way you would want it to. All right, this is about baseball, not about my stupid hamstring. Let me play you something. Have you spent any time around Bryce Miller?
No, actually,
I think
have
you
not.
Would really like him. He reminds me, I said this to Brock earlier, of a professional golfer, the way he talks about his game, where it's just very matter of fact.
I'd rather have Jeff not be around him, because when he's around people, he's going to write a story and then the story never materializes.
And then they stink for a while.
Yeah, let's not have Jeff around him. Uh-uh.
It's probably for the best. But he said something after last night's game that I've never heard, and it struck me as being 100% true. Here was Bryce, who pitched so well last night.
Yeah, it's cool. It's, you know, he's a great pitcher. He's been around for a while, so he knows what he's doing. But it's fun. But I have fun whenever we got the lead. But if we got the lead all game, we can't hit a walk off. So it's funny the way. It's a fun game.
I love that idea. If you have the lead, you can't hit a walk off.
Yeah, I'd rather have the lead.
But isn't that part of what makes baseball fun? Like, yeah, you can't get that joy unless you also have to experience the frustration and lack of faith that comes with failure leading up to it.
Yeah, I think that is legitimate. My favorite part of the walk-off was the bat toss. It was just, couldn't you sense with Mitch Garver that he was just like trying to release all of that frustration? Yeah. It wasn't like a spike. It was just like it wasn't a gentle toss either. It was almost like a release toss. And because everyone else has been playing so well, pitching especially, that I think he really felt like he needed to not validate himself, because he knows how hard the game can be, but just to be part of it. Like, when everyone else is doing cool things, you want to be a part of it. And the Mariners are doing very cool things right now.
Yeah, and it starts with their pitching. I mean, their pitching is just on historic runs. It seems like every night, Jeff, the Mariners PR team sends out numbers in the box score, and it's like, yeah, never been done. Yep, you know, back tied with the – I mean, it's just a ridiculous run. And we were talking a little about this yesterday. Castillo, Logan, George, and Bryce last night, as you said, I mean, absolutely filthy. I mean, those first three are ones. Aren't those first three guys all capable of being aces on just about anybody's staff in baseball?
Yes. We can get into the discussion of what makes a one, and that's going to take a long time, because my definition of a one is a little bit different. But for the purposes of the generally accepted definition of what a number one starter in baseball is, they've got three, and they might have four now.
Yeah, so what, I mean, that's really remarkable to think about, and we haven't even seen Brian Wu yet, and oh, by the way, Emerson Hancock is just racking up quality start after quality start.
He's been perfectly, I'll say this, earlier this week, it was before, I think it was on Sunday, before I went on to Baseball Tonight, I wanted to understand just how good the Mariners pitching had been. So I went to FanGraphs and punched in like a date calendar, like, you know, select statistics by date. And I was sorting it by ERA, and I kept going back a day. And the ERA over like the previous 8 days was 1-something, 9 days, 1-something, 10 days, 1-something, 11 days, 1-something, 12 days. And it kept like getting lower. And so I went back and looked, and I have not updated this since last night. So I don't know, but I went and looked back, and I think it was over the previous, I think it was over a 12 game stretch.
Yeah. 20
the
runs.
Mariners had like, no, it was 11 runs in 10 games. At one point, it was a 1.11 ERA. And I went and looked at that stretch. And historically, like since the turn of the century, I think only two other teams had done it. And it was a Giants team that won a World Series, and it was an Astros team that won a World Series.
Dumb question, but turn of which century?
I mean, this past one.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Baseball goes back all the way to the last one, basically, so I wasn't sure.
Yes, but that would bring us into the dead ball era when, you know, putting up 10 games, giving up like 8 runs was a very regular thing. And just so you don't, like, just so I'm not, like, trying to make you feel dumb, I actually did the search going all the way back then and was like, oh, okay, you moron, you probably should have realized that. So now I'm just going to foist the moronhood on you, adding insult to your busted hamstring, which you got because you're old and can't run. Mm-hmm.
Did you watch the video of that?
No, I tried to, but I didn't want to give Mike the click.
That's fair. Yeah, I can buy that. Hey, let's come back to this rotation because it's been so much fun. What do you do? So Brian Wu had a second start. rehab start was great. He's got a third one coming up, supposed to throw 85 pitches. They said after that they'll make a decision. Let's say you even go one more after that just because there's no rush and you really want to make sure. I know these things tend to work themselves out. They always do. And so this is probably a conversation we don't really need to have. But what do you think about doing? Because they don't want to use a six-man rotation. Brian Wu, I don't think you have any interest in putting him in the pen because he's never done it before. And that would be a huge, huge risk with his arm. Although, obviously, Matt Brash now is, we don't know where that's going. What do? You just send Hancock down?
I think the discussion is, do you send Hancock down and let him, remain stretched out and throwing innings, or do you explore the possibility of keeping Emerson Hancock up as a three-plus inning reliever who, if need be, you could stretch right back out, but a guy who can, if not allow you to save your bullpen, then certainly pitch like productive leverage innings. You just don't see guys go through like relief pitchers go through the order one time. But I would like to see that from a relief pitcher. I would like to have somebody there who I know if my starter goes six innings, maybe I put Emerson Hancock out there for three and let him throw 50 pitches and keep him as stretched out as possible while producing the way that again, because we need that. I understand the Mariners' bullpen has been extraordinarily good so far, right? But I don't know. I love the idea of the long reliever who's not a mop-up reliever. It's just a dude who can go out and shove and do so in wins, so you don't have to go the traditional, seventh-inning setup guy closer every time you get a good start.
Jeff, we talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago about the Houston Astros and how they found a market inefficiency, right? And some of the older pitchers from the Dominican and just the fruit that has borne. I'm curious, when the rest of the league looks around at the Seattle Mariners and says, young ace, young ace, young ace, oh my gosh, how did they go about doing this? How do they go about developing a staff that is the envy of just about everybody in baseball, especially with the youth of these guys all coming up together? When others study the Mariners, was there a market inefficiency? Was it an eye for scouting? Is there a key to their development? What do you think they find when they study the Mariners, like we talked about with the Astros?
I think what they see is guys who can develop players well. And I don't know that player development is a market inefficiency. I think it's a process, and the Mariners do process about as well as any other team. I think they do process in their draft really well, and it's why they've been able to identify guys like Cole Young and like Colt Emerson and like Johnny Farmello, guys who weren't as appreciated perhaps by other organizations and other organizations' draft models. And, they put them into the organization then, and they are player development people. And I think the Mariners do really well is project what a guy can be. That's a hard thing to do, guys. It's a really hard thing to do. But it's not just in the case of George Kirby, who's a first-round pick, and Emerson Hancock, who's a first-round pick. It's taking Bryce Miller and Brian Wu a little bit later. And even a guy like Logan Evans, who I don't know if he's the next really good Seattle Mariners starter, but I'll say this. He was, what was he, like an I think it was like a 12th-round pick last year, and he's at AA already with a sub-2 ERA.
Yeah, does that also extend to what they've done with some of these relievers as well? And first it was Paul Sewald and those guys, and now, I don't know if you've watched Cody Bolton, it'd be weird if you have, but like they've recreated Justin Topa again.
I know. It's I'm telling you, process is such a boring thing to hear about and think about, but they do it really, really well. They just do. And I, you know, the thing about process to me, when I begin to mention it, when asked why teams are winning, it takes a while. You don't like earn your process bona fides within 1 year. This is something that they've done multiple years now with the bullpen guys, and you've seen it with the drafting, with the player development. You know, I asked somebody with the organization, what is it that you guys do best? And his answer was process all the way, because they have figured out things that work, but they're not married to them to the point where if it doesn't start to work or if it doesn't work anymore, that they're going to be, you know, I think St. Louis, for example, fell into that trap. It's the cardinal way or nothing. Well, what happens when everyone else evolves and the cardinal way doesn't do as well as it used to? Are you able and willing to evolve with it? And St. Louis has not done so to the extent that they've needed to, and they've fallen behind because of it. I think the Mariners are, I think they're a smart organization because they are extremely process oriented, but they are not married to these ideals that they've developed in the course of making these players as good as they are. They just know that's what's working now and what's been working for them.
How evergreen is your Julio article?
Very.
Is it going to hit well enough for us to see it at some point? I mean, like, it's becoming kind of a question. I know it's only April 30th, so no one is panicked. Certainly not me, but one home run. He's starting to hit a little bit, which is nice. I mean, seeing him in and around 275. But there's just been a lot of these big moments and a lot of swing and miss. A lot of punches. Yeah.
A lot of punches.
What do you think's going on?
Baseball.
Yeah. That's all we're going to get? Just baseball? Jeff's quiet?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm beginning to feel like it was a mistake to talk about the story, because every time I log on to social, where's the Julio story? Every time Sarah Lang is tweeting about Julio hitting 4-something, 5-something, 6-something over the last 10 games, Mariners fans are like, oh, what are you passing? Where's the Julio story? Here's the thing. I don't blame him. I don't blame him. This is entirely self-inflicted.
Yeah.
And so this one word answer is my acknowledgement that I'm the turd in this situation and that I made a mistake.
Uh-huh.
And it's my mistake coming back to roost and me realizing that and going into a show.
Because I think if you go back and listen, you were so giddy. Remember how giddy he was about the article? So, I mean, yeah. So giddy.
Yeah, there were new anecdotes that nobody had ever heard before.
Right.
Now, is that stuff you pick up sitting front row at WWE events? What's up with that?
What do you think about that? What's up with that?
Well, I have questions.
Is that you sneering at me?
No, I've been to one wrestling event in my life. I didn't have quite the same level of tickets. So, questions: one, did you use your connections to get those tickets, or did you buy them outright?
Use my connections.
Absolutely. 100%. Okay, good. Sorry. That's what I wanted to hear. Good. Did you go straight to Nick Khan?
No, I did not go to Nick Khan. For those who watch wrestling, Michael Cole is the legendary play-by-play guy, has been doing this for decades now. What people don't know is Michael Cole is an insane Mets fan and a hilarious Mets fan, because whenever the Mets are not winning, here's the thing. I have a lot of friends who are like Mets fans. Michael Cole is the most insane of all of them. The texts that I get from him are so funny and so angry and so self-loathing. He turned he turned around dirt, like a match was going on last night, and he turned around and looked at me, and he's like, "You see Severino's got a no-hitter?" During the match. And by the end, like, they're in commercial break, and I tap him on the shoulder. I was like, Swanson broke it up, and he looks at me. He's like, "They're going to lose this game." And they did. They went and lost the game. And by the end of the night, I texted Cole and Pat McAfee. I was like, "Boy, thank you. This was such a great night. Thank you for doing this for me."
That's cool.
And my kids. My kids had such an awesome time. And Cole's response is, "I'm done with the Mets."
Did you guys make signs?
No, we did not.
Lame.
No, trust me, we wanted to, but the fact that we were sitting where we were sitting.
Yeah, respect.
I didn't want to be hanging over the heads of the people who everyone's actually tuning in to look at with a sign that says Jeff Passan is here, which is what it was going to be.
Oh, that would have been pretty good, actually. Uh-huh. I would have given you some props for that one. That would have been great. All right. Jeffrey, we got to go. I got to go ice my hamstring. Obviously, it's been a big part of my life here for the last almost week. Just a lot of ice,
yeah,
rest,
was,
ice.
You know what, though? It was so worth it, though. It was so worth it because at the end of the day, you can say I won walking away.
Yeah,
and that's something race. I'm just disappointed in Mora.
As you should be.
Track star and lost to you. Like, did your dad come out and help like walk you to the finish line?
I'm done with you. I am going to send you the video. You can see it for yourself. I will. You'll have to just be one of the clicks. You can see the video, and maybe someday when you're here, you and I will have to race, and I'll just hurt myself again. Whatever.
I know. I was going to say, you're going to lose to a guy who broke his back.
Yeah.
It's not great.
360 text in says, hamstrings are temporary. Banners hang forever. So I guess we'll leave it on that note. Jeffrey, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, man.
Cheers, boys.
There you go. And what a perfect description of Mets fans. That's just, that is them to a T. A
so
unique,
good.
Unique animal. All right. Nice win for the Mariners last night. Brock, can we spend a few minutes on the Kraken? Because they actually made a huge decision yesterday that needed to be made. What does it really mean? Like, what happens next for a franchise that right now is at a huge inflection point? Which direction are they going to go? It's next on Brock and Salk.